Welcome to the Prickly Pear Podcast, an arts-based podcast created by Blue Cactus Press. In each episode, we chat with creative people at the crossroads of artistic media. I'm your host, Christina Butcher, and today we're chatting with filmmaker, writer, and multimedia artist Jonah Barrett. Jonah, welcome to the show. Thank you for coming out tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Oh my Jonah gosh. Made a long trek all the way from Olympia to Tacoma in the snow.
My boyfriend did, Austin. If we're going to be technical about it, I made him drive.
We are. We also were assholes. We kicked him out of the room so we could record.
Well, he brought his laptop to do his homework and he was going to type the whole time.
What are you going to do to reward him for driving your ass to Tacoma and then kicking him out of the recording studio?
I can't say it right here.
Oh, I love it. Okay. Sold. Jonah, can you tell people who aren't familiar with your work what you do?
I am a multimedia artist.
Okay.
I guess you could call it. I grew up in the forest of Tenino in this big house, and that kind of made me the person who I am, I think. And I've been part of the Olympia community for about 10 years now.
Okay.
I am a filmmaker who makes weird and speculative films.
Fact.
Usually with like a queer twist or something. Mm-hmm. I'm starting to go into documentary a little bit. I'm also a published writer.
Ooh.
My big claim to fame right now is I was published in Forest Avenue Press's anthology, City of Weird.
Oh, I love them.
Yeah.
What else do you do?
What do you mean, what else do I do?
You do a shit ton of things.
I mean, I'm a marketing director at the Olympia Film Society.
Oh, he looks at me like, does that count?
Does it?
Like, does that count?
It's my job.
Of course that counts.
I am the marketing director operating out of a 1924 vaudeville theater in downtown Olympia, which is probably haunted, let's be honest. And
haunted by Arrington? Or ghosts?
I'm pretty sure Arrington is the ghost.
Oh, I could see that. Yeah. Okay.
I always blank on what else I do when people ask me, but I'm sure I do other things.
Do lots of stuff.
Well, I guess when I say I'm a filmmaker and a writer, those are like two giant umbrellas.
Okay.
Like those are the two big umbrellas of my life. If you want to get in the nitty gritty, yeah, I am a screenwriter. I am a director. I am a assistant director when need be, script supervisor, editor, bad special effects person.
Hey, you're doing the Lord's work. You're doing the best you can.
I'm trying, man. I'm trying so much. I think the thing that stands in the way is my budget.
That's what I was going to say.
No,
yeah,
that's fucking fair. Like,
that's the only thing that like ever holds somebody back from being the most amazing special effects person.
Well, the thing is, I could just like hunker down and learn Blender, but that's really hard. I have tried to learn Blender, which is this free open source 3D modeling program.
Okay.
I've been trying to learn this thing since seventh grade. I still do not have the hang of it. But the really cool thing is, at this part of my life, I know other people who animate,
yes,
and they collaborate with me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't need to do that anymore.
I fully support moving in this direction. Having just completely ditched my Adobe suite and washed my hands of designing covers, I'm like, somebody else can do this shit for me. And it's true. It's kind of sometimes you have to think about how much time you're spending doing something okay or kind of good. Mm-hmm. Versus what somebody else who's really good at it can do in like an hour of their life.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
You're so nervous. My little baby bird.
I'm sorry. I'm so
old. Jonah's whispering into his microphone about how nervous he is right now.
I am so nervous.
This coming from somebody who just read a personal essay on bottoming in public.
So I was so scared for that. I was shaking on my little booties, and then I had to get up there and like, I did okay.
Not only did you do okay, it was recorded. You did great. And you did great in front of your mother's fucking knitting group. Amazing.
So what happened there was I was going to read. Jackie Casella had asked me to read at this creative colloquy thing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, of course I'll do it. And I already knew that I wanted to do this essay that I was writing on bottoming. And then my mom said, oh, my friend is also going to be reading, so maybe I'll be there. And I was like, fuck no, don't come. Just stay home. And she was like, are you sure? And I'm like, I am so okay with you not making it all the way out to Tacoma. And so my mom wasn't there, but all her friends were.
Oh, okay. Mom sat it out.
Yeah.
Okay.
But she found the video anyway. Because, like, none of her friends would tell her what it was about. They were just like, oh, Jonah was so charming and funny. My mom would be like, well, what did he read about? And they're like, and they'd like run away. And like they wouldn't tell her. And so she'd go to me and she's like, what did you read about? No one's telling me. And I was like, I'm never going to tell you.
Has she seen the video yet?
Yeah, she found it.
What'd she think?
She was like, nice bottoming video.
God damn. Your mom is super cool, though. I wouldn't expect much of a different reaction than that.
She thought it was really funny.
And your mom is also creative. Isn't she like a mm-hmm. graphic designer?
Yeah, my mom is the most creative person I know. She is the reason I am the way I am today. I come from a family of doers and creators. Mm-hmm. And so I get a lot of my work ethic from my parents. And the big thing that I've noticed while I'm out in the world is that my family never gives up. For example, if there's a half-baked project mm-hmm. that like takes years to finish,
everybody's project?
Well, I mean, we will finish it, or like we will salvage something instead of completely scrap it. Mm-hmm. Like there's always a way to like make something out of a disaster.
I can really appreciate that line of thought.
So I'm really thankful for my mom for teaching me that.
Do you think that is also what led you to be such a strong collaborator? Because I think you collaborate with other artists more than anyone else I know.
So initially, I wasn't a big collaborator.
Okay.
I grew up in this big forest house all by mm-hmm. myself, and I had a little camcorder, and I would like make little movies by myself all the time, or I would make little books, just make all these things by myself all the time. And I made stuff by myself for years, and it was only around middle school where I started to get my friends to start acting in my little movies. Mm-hmm. And then from there, it just kind of grew from that, I guess. And then by the end of high school, I had a pretty good database of actors. And along the way, I had learned that I really like working with people.
You were the only high schooler with a database full of your actor friends. You know that, right? That's incredible. Maybe. Okay, keep telling me things.
My big thing is I like collaborating with people I love, because that is what I think life is all about, making things with people you love. Mm-hmm. And sometimes if I ask a new person, it's because I want to be their friend. I told one actor once, we were reminiscing about this film that we made together. And I was like, oh yeah, I just asked you to star in this thing because I wanted to be your friend and I thought you were cool.
What was the project?
That was my first feature film, actually.
Oh, okay.
It was called The Fabricated Partner of Cody McGuire. Mm-hmm. And the person I was talking to was Kela Kealakai, who played the starring role, Cody McGuire.
Okay.
And that's a spy comedy sci-fi feature film about a pair of scientists who artificially genetically clone the perfect boyfriend, and he escapes from the lab. And
I don't think I've seen this one. The first film I saw of yours was Bad Faith. Was that your second film?
No. I've made a lot of shorts over the years. I think that was like my third or fourth big short, I guess, that I had officially made. And before that came a bunch of other things, including the feature film and I think three web series.
What draws you towards film? Why film as a medium?
I don't know anymore. I've just been doing it my whole life. I've been doing it since I was six. Mm-hmm. So I hate these philosophical questions you're throwing.
Yeah, Jonah cocked his head at me like, why would you ask me that? How dare you?
I mean, why not do film?
Sure, yeah. It's
a medium that I'm really comfortable in mm-hmm. and I really enjoy doing. And I just like telling stories. And that is one of the two mediums that I know really well mm-hmm. that I can do that in.
Okay, gotcha. Can you tell us what you like most about creating movies or writing stories?
What I really get out of creative enjoyment is I don't feel a sense of accomplishment when I finish a project. It's only like much, much later after the fact that I look back at it and I'm like, mm-hmm. oh, wow, I made this thing. Because when I first finish something, it's like I'm still catching my breath. I'm fucking sick of whatever I was making at the time. Mm-hmm. And I just want to get it out. So I fling it out to the universe, and then I don't look at it for a while.
Okay.
It's only later, afterward, that I look back at it. I'm like, oh, cool.
So when you finish something, you don't kind of like sink into that feeling or surround yourself in the content? you just kind of push it aside and move forward?
Yeah, I've never had a sense of accomplishment for anything.
Oh, man.
Or at least immediately.
I wish that I was a shrink because I want to be like, let's talk about that, Jonah. Let's lean into that.
I think it's because I got to keep making stuff.
Okay.
And I can't sit still. For example, like this movie that I'm making right now, it's been almost a year in production. Mm-hmm. And I'm like going crazy because I want it to have been done like 6 months ago.
Which movie is this?
This is a short film called Tetrahedron. And that has to do with scientists dimension hopping and tracking down this giant omniscient pyramid that floats in the sky between dimensions.
And I've seen some photographs and some of the footage of the characters in this. And I have to say that the makeup is really cool. The makeup's on point in this thing.
That is makeup artist Hannah Kritzinger. She is so amazing. I met her on the set of this upcoming horror film called mm-hmm. They Reach. And we would always hang out. We were the two millennials that were like on set for 12 hours at a time. Mm-hmm. Like she was always the first one to get there. And I was always the second one to get there with the producer, Bri Troyer. And so we'd hang out a lot. And so I told her about this project at one point, and she was like, I want to do that. And so I was like, yeah, sure. And so she came on turned my actor, Amber Saman, into a fish person, basically. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of fun with it.
It looks amazing. And from the footage that I've seen as well, I have to say it definitely carries your style of storytelling and film throughout the entire thing. And what I mean is there's a lot of tongue-in-cheek jokes or moments, and it's very campy and it feels very fun.
I feel like I just fell into camp one day. I didn't mean to. I think I tried to make serious stuff for a little bit, mm-hmm. and then it just kind of turned into campiness.
You do it so well, though. Thank you. It's so good. I went to the premiere of Booger at OFS, and I sat in the balcony with a bunch of people who were in the film and a bunch of your fans and friends, and we were just having the best time up there. Everybody was laughing and just excited to see this thing live on the big screen. It was super cool.
Thank you. I think moments like that are the reason I became a filmmaker.
Okay.
Because I love that sense of community that mm-hmm. these screenings bring. I mean, to be quite frank, when I put something on YouTube, it doesn't get a lot of traction mm-hmm. because algorithms and too much content out there, blah, blah, blah. But IRL screenings, when you're sitting down with a bunch of people, showing them your work, that is what I love the most about okay. being a filmmaker.
Now that you've said this very deep thing, can you give us a breakdown of other acronyms that we're going to need to know? Sock it to us.
There's WTF.
People got that one, right?
There's LGBTQ.
They got that. Give us the good stuff.
I don't have any, dude.
I learned what thought was today.
You didn't know what that was?
No.
Okay.
I learned at some point and then forgot because it's stupid.
To be fair, I didn't know what thought was until about 6 months ago. I went to a friend and I was like, what does thought mean? Like tater tot? And they're
like, I wish it meant tater tot.
My favorite, this one messes Austin up. Weird flex, but okay.
What does that mean?
It's like when someone kind of like shows off in front of you and you kind of blink for a second, you're like, oh, okay. That was a weird flex, but okay.
Okay.
Weird flex, but okay. You can say that if I like humble brag or something during okay. this.
Okay, I'm going to try to practice that throughout this interview. I'm going to say it at the most random times.
Cool.
Jonah, you are such a busy person between OFS, your own creative endeavors. Do you even have free time? And if you do, what do you do in it?
I mean, realistically, I waste time on the internet.
Yes.
But one thing I actually really do like to do in my free time, which I don't do enough, but I wish I did, was going exploring abandoned places or dangerous locales, I guess. I love abandoned houses. I think there's something beautiful about them, mm-hmm. I suppose. I think they're creepy and like fun to explore.
And I can attest to this because I think half the time when you and I hang out, we go to caves or cave-like places.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we need to bring Sam along so we can walk around graveyards, abandoned buildings, and go through caves. And we'll just live a series of short horror films.
My best friend, Sam Bro, she is my main adventure buddy. Mm-hmm. And we have done some of the most insane shit together. And Austin also has tagged along on a couple of them. One time we went to a lighthouse and descended a cliff that the lighthouse was on and explored the tide pools. Another time Sam and I got lost in this big, windy, black forest. Mm-hmm. And like there was something in the bushes kind of following us. And that was creepy.
Was Austin with you?
No, he was at home sleeping.
Aw, can you tell everybody who Austin is?
Austin is my beloved boyfriend.
His lover.
Love of my life. Aww. He's in the other room right now.
We no joke kicked him out of the podcast room. I'm sorry, Austin. I will make Jonah buy you dinner.
You know what's sad? He bought me dinner tonight.
What a good boyfriend. He is a good boyfriend.
He's like the best boyfriend in the world. It's scary sometimes.
He's delightful too.
I love him so much.
Shout out to Austin.
Austin Bennett. He is an actor, by the way, everyone, if you want to cast him.
Sorry, Austin. You're going to be mortified as usual when you find out what we've done. It's okay. Just go with it. Let's talk a little bit about one of your big filmmaking projects right now that is a slow, beautiful burn. Let's talk about Wordsmiths. Tell us what Wordsmiths is, please.
So Wordsmiths is a documentary web series that I started back in 2017. Mm-hmm.
I want the fancier version. What would you say that if you're trying to hype somebody up?
I interview local literary leaders.
Still boring. Try again.
Wordsmiths is a badass documentary series about people who fuck with words.
Yes. Okay, one more.
Wordsmiths is a finite experience on the YouTubes hosted by the indelible... Wordsmiths is my show where I talk to bookie people.
What I'd love to hear. Fine, I don't know what I'm trying to say.
So Wordsmiths is this interview series basically where I've dubbed these people local literary leaders because I like alliteration. Mm-hmm. But it's just book people in the Pacific Northwest or writers. And right now it's in three parts. Only the first part is released right now. But sharing your work, publication, and book selling are the three big prongs that I try to hit. And right now we're working on the second episode with actually Laura Stanfill.
Oh man, she's cool.
This is going to be a really good meaty episode. I'm just saying. We filmed at Browsers. Shout out to Browsers Bookshop. And Laura just had all this great insight about the publishing process and what authors can do to understand the publishing world and get a hold of publishers. I wanted to make this with writers in mind, honestly. That's my intended audience.
Episode one of Wordsmiths is already out. You can find it all over the internet, right?
Yeah. If you want my YouTube channel, it's youtube.com/lazyeyesinc. That's INC.
What does that mean?
Well, you see, I made this YouTube channel when I was in high school. Mm-hmm. And my first ever web show was called Lazy Eyes Incorporated.
If I Google this, can I find this?
Probably not. Thank God. But if you YouTube it, you can find it.
Yay! Okay. And so these are going to be like embarrassing videos you made in high school that you wish would just die, but they're on the World Wide Web now?
Kind of. Cool. Yeah. I mean, all the other actors really wish it wasn't there still. They're very cringe. And I'm just like, look, you can see me develop my skill, kind of. But
you are my living portfolio, guys.
It's true. Lazy Eyes was this abstract sci-fi show that included evil genetic monstrosities and time travel and just a lot of weird Douglas Adams-y shit.
These are common Jonah Barrett themes, I will say.
I developed them at a very early age. It's kind of like this colorful, batshit crazy kind of show. And that was my first ever coherent series, basically. And so when I was making the YouTube channel, I was like, user Lazy Eyes Inc. Because I don't want to fucking pay for Vimeo.
No.
That's too much money.
Too much.
Mm-mm. Don't got time for that. If you don't like the ads on YouTube, just use an ad blocker.
Or wait 7 seconds, guys. Just 7 seconds. It'll be over soon.
The sponsored content.
Somebody's got to make money. I get it. As you might have guessed already, the Prickly Pear podcast is recorded right here in Tacoma at Oaks and Alder Day Spa and Apothecary. Oaks and Alder has a beautiful salon space filled with plants and textiles, and it offers a number of spa services, including massage, facials, natural skincare products, and bulk herbs. We're big fans of Oaks and Alder ourselves, and we couldn't recommend it highly enough to our friends and listeners. Now, let's get back to the show. So, we're going to go into our We Love You, But We Need Answers, Jonah, Variety Hour!
What?
And for all of our listeners out there, let me just break this down real quick. The We Love You, But We Need Answers, Jonah, Variety Hour is a series of questions posted by friends, lovers, family, and enemies on the interweb. There aren't that many questions, but they're really good. Jonah has not seen these questions, even though Jackie Casella almost screwed it up at the writer's retreat at the doghouse. That's right, Jackie, I know what you did. And Adam Blodgett, I know you didn't do anything to stop it, traitors. Okay, now.
Okay, cool.
Shout out to all my favorite people.
Oh my God.
Are you ready, Jonah?
No, but go.
Okay. Question number one. What was life like inside the whale?
Fuck off.
Is that your official answer?
So when I was little, I used to love that story. Mm-hmm. I, for some reason, my family's not religious, but I would end up going to a lot of religious schools.
I'm sorry.
I know. I went to a religious preschool, and like we would color in Jesus. Like, but
what color did you make your Jesus?
I think I colored his robes blue or something. Okay. Something boring.
It happens.
I don't remember. But I loved that story. And I also loved whales. Mm-hmm. So like the fact that Jonah and the Whale was a story, I was like, wow, it was made for me. Oh my God. And so I would always go out and like, I would somehow find all of these children's Bible books or things. And I would always find the story of Jonah and the Whale. And I would get my parents to buy me the Bible. So I would have the story of Jonah and the Whale.
You had a collection of Bibles, of children's Bibles?
Yeah.
That is so adorable and scary.
It was weird. My parents, they were kind of weirded out too. I went to elementary and middle school, a Catholic elementary / middle school. It was like a joint thing. The only reason I went is because in second grade, we took a tour of all the schools in Thurston County. And I got to choose which one I wanted. And they were teaching dinosaurs in second grade at this Catholic school, this fucking private Catholic school that was $500 a month. And I was like, I want to go to this one. And they're like, fucking course you do, Jonah. We'll do it for you.
For those of you that don't know, Jonah is a dinosaur enthusiast, to say the least.
Fucking dinosaur freak.
Dinosaurs in his films, dinosaurs in his bathroom, dinosaurs on his wall, dinosaurs in his kitchen.
I just never grew out of it.
It's okay.
I went from whales to trains to dinosaurs, and the dinosaurs just stuck.
You're living your truth, brother.
I am. It's great.
Okay, question number two. Assuming you were abducted by aliens who could transform you into anything, what would you want to be?
A dinosaur.
Aww, bringing it back around. What kind of dinosaur?
Ooh, one of the little dromaeosaurs that had feathers that could fly.
Okay.
That's a raptor.
Okay.
A little flying raptor.
Well, that's terrifying.
I know, right?
Oh my God, flying but raptor. But then
I'd both be a dinosaur and I could fly.
Okay, fair enough.
There you go.
All right. So far, Jonah is breezing through these questions and I don't appreciate it. So, question number three. If you could be any movie monster in film history, what would you be? Additionally, what other movie monster would you want to fight?
I mean, Godzilla is my all-time favorite, but like, I feel like everyone says that. You know who I want to be?
Tell us.
I want to be King Ghidorah.
What is that?
King Ghidorah is Godzilla's arch enemy, who is this golden three-headed dragon from space.
What?
Yeah, and he like towers over Godzilla and usually beats the shit out of him until like 3/4 through the movie. Then suddenly like they swap roles and Godzilla suddenly like, oh, never mind, I can beat your ass. And then he beats King Ghidorah. Like, it's like a Deus Ex Machina, but like it's just Godzilla's strength that saves the day that he finds within himself or something.
Okay. He goes berserk.
I really want King Ghidorah to win someday, but that's just me.
You could make that movie.
I could.
Jonah's eyes just got so big. That was the most excited he's been since we started this.
As King Ghidorah, I would fight. I'm thinking.
Yeah, take your time.
What's your favorite movie monster, Tina?
Okay. I have a lame answer.
Okay.
But it's an answer nonetheless. I'll tell you who I don't want to be. I don't want to be the spirits in the Bird Box. Because I'm actually kind of confused about what they can and cannot do and which mediums they can and cannot inflict their Bird Boxy power on people. Why can't they make it through a window, but they can make it through technology?
I want to be...
through wires. What?
I want to be the Bird Box demons, but only if it's the cut version where they're like weird little eternal babies.
Ooh, I haven't seen that.
What? It just looks so bad. They had actually designed the creatures, but then like they had done a test with them. They were like, this is too fucking ridiculous because it just looked like a giant, stupid baby. Like it looked like a baby and they were like, oh, we shouldn't do this. So they didn't. But like the pictures are still out there so you can see what could have been.
This is good to know. Next question. This is one of my favorites. How did you receive the title the Glenn Close of Olympia?
Who said that? Wait, I know exactly who said that. It was Robert Patrick.
Do you have things you want to say to Robert Patrick?
I mean, I skinned a lot of puppies.
He's wiggling his eyebrows at me as if that should entice me towards him. Puppy skinner. I don't know.
I would never skin a puppy. Oh, thank my gosh. You.
Wait, so how did you receive this title?
This is the first I'm hearing of it.
Oh,
this
okay.
is a... this is a ballpark question that Rob just pulled out of his ass.
So Rob bestowed this title on you without telling you?
Apparently, which is weird because just the other day, he also bestowed the title The Gatsby of Olympia.
Mm.
So I don't know.
That one's more confusing.
That one has a story, though.
Okay.
At the Olympia Ballroom, which is this really cool historic building, there's this indoor balcony, and he took a video of me overviewing the party. Gatsby
oh,
style.
Okay.
And so he's gotcha. Like, you're the Gatsby of Olympia, Jonah. And I was like, thanks, Rob. I know. As the Glenn Close of Olympia, I don't know. What does Glenn Close do that I do?
I have no fucking clue who
is
Glenn Close is.
Is she a snarky bitch?
I don't know.
I bet she
Somebody
is.
Somebody educate us. We Rob. Could Google it.
No.
No. Not as fun. Moving on. Is there a point in time that you would go back to give yourself a high five and tell yourself how goddamn amazing you would one day become?
Like a low point in my life or like?
No.
I mean, there's some cool points in my life where I want to give myself a high five. I feel like I was on a high then. I'd be like, you're going to become this and do this. And I would have been like, yeah, I know.
Okay, cool.
But
I can dig it.
4 years ago, which hurts me to say, I put on a 3-part show called Science Fiction Triple Feature at my college.
Mm-hmm.
And it was this big extravagant event and we quote unquote sold out even though it was free and there was no tickets, but the whole lecture hall got filled up.
That's what counts.
And it was 3 mini one-act plays, one after the other, about science fiction. And mine was the last one. And it included live action and video effects. It was fucking batshit crazy, but it felt really, really good.
What made it crazy?
So it was called the Infinity Box, and my father actually built this giant cube on stage, basically this big white cube. And mm-hmm. in the story, it's a virtual reality cube. So you walk into the cube and you go into a virtual reality world, basically. It's based on Ray Bradbury's Felt.
Okay.
And so whenever a character would walk into the actual physical cube on stage, on screen, there'd be a video of them going inside.
Oh, cool.
Interacting with this virtual world. And it failed the first night, to be honest, because the video played without sound. Mm-hmm. And so we make a big spectacle of it. And we're like, ooh, these characters are going inside the box. What's going to happen? And the video starts playing and it's quiet. And you can hear me in the very back row shouting, well, that's not supposed to happen. And so we like run around. And I went on stage and I was like, wait, everyone, technical difficulties, hold on. And then we fixed it and then it was good. But anyway, the second day, though, it was amazing.
Can we find it on Lazy Eyes, the YouTube channel?
The whole thing is under science fiction triple feature. It's like an hour-ish long. It's all three plays together. We recorded it during one of the dress rehearsals, which people didn't know when they watched the video. They're like, wow, I'm so sorry that like no one came to your thing. And I was like, no, we sold out. We just filmed it when it was empty because it was a dress rehearsal. So if I could go back in time, I would give myself a high five closing night because that felt really good to make.
All right. Next question. What would be the title of the Lifetime movie based on your life?
Jonah Finally Bottoms.
Yes! I love it. By the way, the story that you read at Creative Colloquy last month is about bottoming. Is that on the Creative Colloquy website right now?
It's not.
So if somebody wanted to find the bottoming story, which is called...
Anal Pleasure and Health.
Oh, yes. If somebody wants to read about anal pleasure and health, where can they find it?
They can find it on the Blue Cactus Press website.
That's right, bitches. We're going to put it up in the podcast notes. Get ready.
It's going to be super good.
All right. Moving on to question number 7.
What is it?
Question number 7. China recently landed spacecraft on the dark side of the moon. And this person's first thought was, geez, it seems like a great place to hide a dead body. What dreadful fads, trappings, and other crappy manifestations of humanity would you be cool with banishment forever to the dark side of the moon, never to be seen or heard from again? Hold your thought. There's a follow-up question that's actually a statement. Follow-up comment by an actual space archaeologist. Yes, that's a thing. Her name is Beth O'Leary. She's my mentor. She's the bomb. She says... Yeah, you know, that exists. That's a great question. But the far side of the moon isn't always dark. By the way, there is another USSR robotic spacecraft there. It could have Russian bodies.
What? I need you to go back and like annotate everything you just said. What people would I want to see buried on the moon?
Sure.
No, no. What was the question?
Okay, so the actual question is... What dreadful fads, trappings, or other crappy manifestations of humanity would you be cool with banishment forever to the dark side of the moon to, never to be seen or heard from again? But also remember that the dark side of the moon isn't always dark.
That's really weirdly related to this novel I wrote once, but... Ooh, there's a humble brag. Quick.
Weird flex, but okay. do I have to sound more chill about it? Like, weird flex, but okay.
Okay, weird flex, but okay.
Weird flex, but okay.
Okay, you know, I would put Seattle yuppies, I guess.
Okay.
Because we're getting a lot of those in Olympia.
We have a lot of those in Tacoma. Who else would you put on the dark side of the moon?
Ooh.
Or what else?
I would put all the artists in my life that... talk the talk but don't walk the walk.
Talk some shit. Let's go. Tell us more.
You know what I'm talking about. In every artistic group, there are those people that are like, I am such a creative. I have so many ideas just swelling. Like, creativity is in the air tonight. Oh my gosh. And then like you see what they made. And like they've hyped this up and like they've gotten people all around them being like, oh my gosh, this person's like a creative genius and like they're such a visionary. And then you see what they've made, be it a film or shitty poem or something, and you're like,
pass.
You're just like, what? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But the thing that drives me nuts is that it feels shallow, or it's like, we've seen this a million times. Mm. And because it's so accessible, lots of people love it. Mm-hmm. And you're driven crazy because you're like, I've been doing this my whole life and you just discovered filmmaking 2 weeks ago or something like that. That's always bugged me. Or people who just take their art too seriously. I don't know. There's those people that like are really dramatic about it.
So do you feel like the good place to be is sort of in the middle?
I don't know. I don't want to tell people how to like live their life, but like I like artists that are able to laugh at themselves and their work, if need be. They still do take themselves seriously, but they also know that life is a farce and we're all just here on this shitty rock together.
You said something the other day that I think really captures part of your filmmaking style. You said, I try not to do the same thing twice.
Yes.
And I thought that's very Jonah Barrett.
That is something... one of my heroes, Imogen Heap, said a long time ago on a vlog. And I don't try to do the same thing twice. Sometimes I accidentally might do the same thing twice, but I always try to expand my creative fingers into different genres or different types of filmmaking, or maybe not even filmmaking, maybe different types of creative writing or nonfiction. For example, Wordsmiths is documentary stuff. I haven't done documentary in years, and I'm kind of redoing the platform for myself.
Mm-hmm. What are you doing differently?
It's more talk showy. Because initially, back in like high school, I would make these little news segments, documentary things, you know, about like mud snails in the lake or little junior filmmakers in high school and stuff like that. And now I'm just sitting down and having conversations with these literary leaders. Mm-hmm. I love saying literary leaders. It's it's pretty cringy, but like I like it.
Jonah's going to go home and edit his synopsis on the first episode.
Literary leaders.
I love it. As a word nerd, I'm into it. So, you know, you have my vote of approval. That was our last question from our weird We Need Answers Variety Hour. What else are you working on right now?
Tetrahedron, mm-hmm. That sci-fi thing. I am wrapping up production on another documentary, actually, about volunteer firefighters from the 70s.
Cool.
And that might have an evergreen premiere. I'm not super sure yet. It's very up in the air. Mm-hmm. But I'm working on that. There's this anthology that I've been working on since 2013 that I'm trying to get fucking done.
Is that Menagerie?
Menagerie, yes.
Cool.
And there's a Bad Faith companion book that I'm trying to work on. Mm-hmm. Get that out of the way. And I guess collecting dust on the shelf for about 2 or 3 years now is a novel about astronauts, but that's way, way into the future.
Okay.
So Gotcha. Nothing like that. Other cool things, though, there are some ideas that are floating around. Like Rob and I really want to make something out of the Capitol Theater about like a rat demon.
Okay.
Which could be cool, but might never happen. Logan Fenner, a writer friend of mine, is currently writing a script about a lake monster at a trailer park.
Okay.
So that might happen. Something I've actually concretely, though, started working on is a period piece that takes place in Olympia in, I think, the 1870s.
Okay.
Which is about forest spirits, I guess, cool. And conservationism. So
I like the sound of this.
Yeah, I think that's going to be really fun.
All of those things sound interesting, but I'm like, swamp monster in a trailer park? Sign me up.
I live by the Chehalis Trail, which has Chambers Lake next to it. Mm-hmm. And I walk by this lake all the time. And I always think about lake monsters. Like, I grew up in love with lake monsters from like age 7. And I also have a friend who lives at a trailer park. Mm-hmm. And it has actually this sculpture of a lake monster on its shores, which is really weird. But something I always loved throughout my life is lakes and docks, even though they fucking terrify me. Mm-hmm. And I thought that'd be interesting if, like, what if there was like a boy who lived at a trailer park who saw a lake monster and nobody believed him? But that may never happen. That might happen.
Who knows?
We don't know.
It's out in the universe now. Okay. Well, Jonah, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's been really fun.
All right, we'll see you later.
Bye!
Thanks again for listening to the Prickly Pear podcast, which is just one of the many things that we create at Blue Cactus Press. If you like what you heard in today's episode, check us out online at bluecactuspress.com or on Facebook or Instagram to hear more. Quick shout out to our friend DJ JC Delacy, who created the music for the Prickly Pear podcast, and Oaks and Alder Day Spa and Apothecary for hosting us in their beautiful space. And thank you for listening. We'll see you around town.